We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Say this time last season, someone's asked outside of Ann Arbor or outside the state of Michigan, hey, can you describe the Wolverines women's basketball team? Unquestionably, the conversation would have started with Naz Hillman, and for many, that's where the conversation would have ended, probably. Naz was the star of a program still trying to take that next step to break through into that upper echelon nationally. Fast forward a year, and no doubt, Naz is still the star of this program, but she is far from alone. This clip from last week's conversation with Kim Barnes-Rico stuck with me.
People in the community, I mean, people all around the world. I mean, our kids go places now and people recognize them. And they tell me, Coach, this is the first time ever. Like, you know, we can't go out. And people are like, oh, Naz. And not only Naz, but, you know, Danielle Roush is like, wow, everybody knows who I am.
There are a number of reasons for that. Beating Tennessee to reach your first ever Sweet 16, taking a Baylor team to the wire in that round. The Lady Bears then took UConn to the wire in the Elite Eight. But I think Naz deserves credit for it in an interesting way. Naz is still this team's best player. She stuffs the box score. She is the 1A focal point on the opponent's scouting report. Yet, she plays unselfishly. She wants to see her teammates succeed. She elevates them when being asked about her own excellence. And you sense that mutual respect, that mutual love that her teammates feel for her and the appreciation they have for her efforts. I don't care what field you're in. To advance, you need to be good, but you also need some help. You need someone, many people, oftentimes, to invest in you, to believe in you, to prop you up. I'd lose every listener on this podcast simply by just saying the names of those who helped me advance in broadcasting because the list would go on and on and on. Naz does that on the floor with how she plays. She also does it off the floor. And the results certainly spoke for themselves in the success of the team and in the recognition that so many are receiving, deservedly so, Naz and many others. Always enjoy conversations with Naz Hillman. Another one's coming up here in a bit on this week's edition of Defend the Block.
We're talking Michigan basketball. Welcome to Defend the Block, where we'll take you inside the basketball programs with interviews, analysis, and so much more. Now, here's your host, Brian Bush.
Naz Hillman coming up in a bit, but first I do want to touch on the men's basketball news from the last week or so. Both Sean D. Brown Jr. and Mike Smith electing to forego that extra bonus COVID year and head to the NBA draft process. We are wishing both of those young men all the best. And it's interesting now is, gosh, the transfer portal is becoming more and more utilized. It's becoming more and more of a topic. Personally, I'm all for it. I'm great with it because it gives these student athletes an opportunity to change things. I do think that there are some players who would be better served not transferring, but sticking it out in their current situation, but it's not for me or anyone else other than them and their immediate family and their inner circle to make that decision. But I will say that, you know, these transfers, it's a lot of discussion and there's a lot of fodder around them. Rarely do you have a program indoctrinate two transfers as smoothly as Michigan did with Sean Dee and Mike Smith. And I want to share a couple of things about both of those young men here. And we're efforting to get both of them, obviously, a wild stretch as they get ready for whatever this pre-draft situation will look like in the NBA. But, you know, in Sean Dee's perspective, so my background before coming to Ann Arbor was to work in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, the home of Wake Forest. And Sean Dee Brown Jr., everyone in that community, everyone who was a fan of Wake Forest, they knew that Sean Dee had the type of ability that he could be a real contributor on a winning team like he was with Michigan. It just didn't happen for him. And you always wonder, it's so tough to break through and be that consistent threat, that consistently dominant team. Because when Sean Dee went to Wake Forest, this wasn't the Wake Forest program that it is right now, trying to figure things out with a new head coach and Steve Forbes, who came from ETSU. That was a team under Danny Manning that had made the NCAA tournament the year that Sean Dee Brown Jr. had committed to Wake Forest. It was a first four. They got eliminated. They haven't been back since. Yeah, it doesn't pack the punch, but in that situation, you could say, yeah, Wake Forest is ascending. It doesn't work out. He's sitting there 3 years later going, I want a chance to win. And we knew from the outset that Sean Dee Brown Jr. had bought into this program for a number of reasons. One, he was not guaranteed immediate eligibility. Remember, he found out in October, practice in advance of the season was already starting up in a unique way because of the COVID protocols and all that went into that. But he was buying in saying, I'm good if I'm able to be eligible this season or not. And in listening back, this is a clip from the first post-game podcast. This is Michigan Bowling Green. That doesn't that seem like ages ago, right? Just listen. First off, I love the Terry Mills interaction of this because you could tell from the outset. I mean, Terry was bullish on Sean Dee and his fit into this program. But the interaction and just how Sean Dee, one game in, you knew what he was focused on. Yes, he wants to advance and get better individually, but he was so locked in on helping the team.
I'm very impressed, and I'm thankful that I got invited to the coming out party for you here today.
Yes, sir.
I thought you shot the ball with a lot of confidence. I think we talked about it on air. You shot one of them and almost chased it in. Mm-hmm. And I said, no. I said, he know that was good.
Yeah.
And then the next time you shot one, you headed out before it even touched the rim. So, tell me how you felt shooting the basketball out there in the second half.
It felt great. I know, you know, the first half, you know, I was kind of in foul trouble. But, you know, I played defense. I rebounded anything to help my team win. And then, you know, Coach Howard was saying we were getting great shots. So we just had to keep shooting them. You know, unfortunately, you know, Mike, Eli, you know, gave me good looks, gave me the ball. And I, you know, just trusted them and I shot my shot. So, but, you know, we all played collectively as a team. We all shot it well the second half. We knew the first half we didn't really shoot it that well, but those shots we know that we can make.
And that was the constant theme from Sean Dee, not just in how he played, but in how he carried himself, how he answered questions, what he was discussing pregame and postgame. And I always appreciate that about him because he kind of like Nas in that discussion off the top, he recognized that, you know, listen, I might not have the same statistics that I put up in the ACC, but people know it's there. I need to show that I can do some of the other stuff and I can be a winner so that he's elevating himself kind of in a secondhand way by focusing on the firsthand nature of I'm going to help others around me. I'm going to be the square peg that goes into the square hole. I'm not trying to force something into the triangle or the circle. I need to be the right puzzle piece for this Michigan team. Remember, this time last year, when we're looking at this roster, and then Sean Dee gets added to it, and we don't know if he's going to be eligible, there were people out there saying, yeah, well, maybe it'd be better if, you know, Michigan had Sean Dee sit this year, and he could be a, you know, more minutes-dependent type of a guy. Michigan could need him for 30-plus minutes on the 21-22 team because it's going to be younger. I'm of the belief you always want the best possible team, and we saw just how vital Sean Dee was with some of the injuries down the stretch this season for Michigan. But that was the uniqueness of Sean Dee. And that's where the difference of Sean D versus Mike Smith fits in. The similarities, we've heard them over and over and over. Sean D and Mike both came to Michigan wanting a chance to win, wanting an opportunity to, you know, feel the team success that their individual numbers, accolades, abilities deserved. It just didn't happen for them at Wake Forest or at Columbia. But the difference with Sean D versus Mike was, you know, Sean D felt like, you know, as you're analyzing the roster 9 months ago, yeah, that's, Sean D's kind of a luxury. Michigan has wings and Franz and Isaiah and Brandon Johns Jr. and others. Mike Smith was stepping in to a monster-sized hole that was vacated by Xavier Simpson. And that's why I'm so impressed with what Mike Smith brought to the table. I thought defensively he held his own. I thought offensively, I mean, this is a guy who would shoot it almost 20 times a game. And he, I'm not a huge film watcher. You can go and you know, check out the great work of a Dylan Burkhardt of UM Hoops or some of the other folks who really delve into the film. But to me, I didn't remember many instances where I thought, oh boy, Mike kind of forced that shot. He had to. It was a prerequisite. His coaching staff was telling him to force shots when he was at Columbia. This was different, and he embraced it, and he did a great job. And, you know, I think the Sean D news about the NBA is, you know, maybe not as surprising as Mike. Mike talked about it before. He's been counted out because of his size, because of kind of where he came from. I think that's why he attached to a Jimmy Butler type, who's also been doubted, who hasn't been elevated to that level of super-duper star in the NBA, and, of course, their connections geographically as well. But, you know, Mike Smith has talked about several times, and this was the best instance that I found in going back and listening to some stuff from Mike during the course of the season. He was talking about playing with NBA guys. He was talking about playing in NBA pace. It's, I think, pretty easy to connect the dots. He looked at this as a chance. Here's my opportunity to prove that I can fit an NBA-style system. Juwan Howard and his coaching staff, they run that NBA style really on both ends of the floor. It's sophisticated, there's no doubt, and that will help him in this process. But Mike Smith has had this, you can tell, on his mind of wanting to play an NBA style. And you know what? I'm all for a young man saying, this is my opportunity to try to capitalize. Doubt me if you dare. I'm going to try to do it. This was an interaction that we had on our one-on-one interview that I shared with Mike late in December. And I asked him about playing with this team, playing around guys that, frankly, were better than what he played with at Columbia. And here was his answer, NBA themed.
I've been trying to get everybody involved in the games. There will be a game where I have to do more on offense and show my ability, which is coming for sure. I know one of these games because people are going to not help so much off of the shooters because everybody's been shooting the ball really well. But I'm for sure playing with a lot of pros, and it's nice to do that because it's allowing me to show all my attributes and show all my cards at once. And it allows everybody else to play the game that they play, especially with the way that the speed that I play the game at, it's kind of like an NBA pace. You know what I mean? It's up and down. It's fast. And Coach prides himself now that he wants to play really fast. It's go.
Of course, this is not something that in December, I'm saying he definitely had this in his mind, but I think he looked at this as an opportunity to say, hey, I want to get there. That's what any basketball player who plays at this level wants. Michigan can provide that opportunity. And he showed, the best of Mike Smith showed that he can compete at an NBA level. Now he needs to do that more consistently. He'll need to continue to improve his defense. Obviously, the size is not ideal. But I love the fact that he's going for it. Would have loved to have seen him back in Ann Arbor, as with Sean D and Isaiah and everybody else, of course. We're selfish that way as Michigan fans. But this is a really interesting opportunity for Mike. I think he did about as much as he could have done to boost that stock. Now you see where it lands, and that doesn't mean he's guaranteed to get drafted. I would assume that most experts will not have him in their mock drafts, but it only takes one. It only takes one team to fall in love with you to see, hey, you know what? This person can fit our skill set, can fit our culture. We certainly root for Mike Smith in that regard. So that's my reaction to the men's news. Obviously, there's still some other things that need to be straightened out with Michigan's roster. We will continue to talk through that throughout the spring and summer here on Defend the Block. We will also hope to get both Sean D and Mike at some point here on the podcast to talk about their one season in Ann Arbor. We're working to get some of the incoming freshmen on the show as well as we bring you as much off-season content as we can. An encouragement to subscribe, rate, and review. Send us an email, MichiganWolverinesRadio@gmail.com. Really appreciate some of the emails we've gotten in as of late. Always thankful for people's ideas, for people's feedback. It means a great deal that so many have listened as we have added this onto the In the Trenches format and the Conquering Heroes. So Dawn, Steve, Chad, Peter, Ira, Tim, plenty of others on Twitter as well. Thank you very much for those kind words. Keep them coming. MichiganWolverinesRadio@gmail.com. Your ideas, as this is our first offseason. We started the Defend the Block episodes right around the start of November. So this is the first go-round of this. We want to bring you what you want to hear. And I know one of the people you want to hear from is Naz Hillman. Such a brilliant junior season. Such a brilliant person on and off the floor. Enjoy this conversation. She talks about the season that was, what she's working on now, and some of the off-the-court things that she's very passionate about as well. Without further ado, here's Naz Hillman. Always great to catch up with Naz Hillman here on Defend the Block. And, well, Naz, you've had a few weeks to reflect on what was an incredible season. When you think back, when you reflect now that you've gotten out of the day-to-day grind of that season and all that it entailed on and off the floor, what are the memories that really stand out to you as you've gotten a chance to be away from it a little bit now?
Yeah, definitely how grateful I am for my teammates. It was an extremely tough season due to pauses and shutdowns and, I mean, COVID in general. But they definitely helped me to get through that. And it wouldn't have been easy, you know, if every single one of them weren't there. You know, those were the main people that you saw every day. You weren't really seeing family. You weren't really seeing school friends. So the bond that we continued to build throughout the season is definitely something that I have been able to have an opportunity to reflect on, as well as the bubble. And I mean like the NCAA bubble, just because it was another opportunity for us to be closer, get to know each other better as people. But I think we played some of our best basketball in the bubble and was really able to showcase what Michigan women's basketball is all about. It was just a great overall experience. And just in terms of being with the team and playing the sport that I love. So just my teammates in general was definitely something that I reflected on and enjoyed throughout the season, and then the bubble, the experience in the bubble.
Have you gone back and watched the Tennessee game, and have you gone back and watched on the complete opposite spectrum the Baylor game?
Yes, so I have watched the Tennessee game. I'm a big film watcher, so after the Tennessee game, I watched it before going into the Baylor game. So that game's been long gone watched, but I have not watched the Baylor game. I've been thinking about it, but I haven't quite brought myself to relive that quite yet. In such a close battle, those are the heartbreakers. So I have not watched that in at all, actually. I mean, maybe just like clips from social media, but I've not watched that game yet.
In talking with Coach Barnes-Rico about the whole process of leaving the bubble and then the plane issues that you and your teammates had in Evansville and in the air. Take me through those few hours. I mean, I have to imagine that was such a whirlwind. I'm curious how you digested it all.
Yeah. So it was very interesting to say the least. But the whole time in my head, it was like, you know, we weren't supposed to go home. That was the main thing. Like, obviously we weren't even supposed to go home. We shouldn't have even been in the air. But once I got past that,
It was just, it was crazy because the first thing that like started everything, of course you had turbulence, you know, we've had turbulence on flights before, normal. I'm listening to music like halfway asleep and the like oxygen masks or whatever you call them come down. I'm like, ah, this is like, it's an accident. Like there's no way this came down on purpose. Because the flight attendant didn't say anything initially. So I'm like, oh, maybe just like, I don't know. And they're like, please fix your face mask. Fix yours first and then someone to the next to you. And I'm like, oh my gosh. First of all, I did not listen to the instructions in the beginning like I'm supposed to. So I don't know how to put this thing on. I don't know if I'm breaking it. My bag doesn't inflate, which is like, okay, I guess.
You got that far. You knew that part of it.
Well, yeah, I learned that after. So I was freaking out. I was like, I'm going to be the one on here to pass out because I don't have the right, I don't have oxygen. But I that was like the, after I couldn't figure that out, my ear like ringing. So I couldn't even focus on the fact that we were having turbulence and we would have to have an emergency landing because my ear was like screaming at me. So finally we land and we get to Evansville. Never even heard of Evansville, Indiana. Some of our Indiana people barely knew where Evansville, Indiana was. And we have to go into this small airport. And at first it was fun, quote unquote fun, because we were like, some people were playing games. Me and Emily were like making TikToks and videos. And that was like hour one. And then we're like, okay, like what's next? And then people get tired, then people get hungry and people just want to go home. And I think we were there for like 4 hours or so. And then we're like, you know, are we flying back? Are we getting a car? Are we getting a bus? But you can only do car and bus like the next morning or something. Everybody's like, we just want to get home at this point. Finally, we get our other airplane and we're just like, is this even safe? But we just want to get home. Like they sent us home the same night we lost. Like everybody just wants to go home. And there was actually turbulence on that airplane as well because there was still like the storm or whatever was going on. And at that point, I was like, I mean, I hope we make it, but, you know, we don't. And that sounds terrible. But I was with people that I loved. So it was like, you know, everything is in God's hand at this point. And I mean, obviously we ended up making it home safely, but it was a lot right after a loss. That's for sure.
Yeah. There's no doubt. I always enjoy your perspective on things. That's certainly an interesting conclusion you got to at the tail end of it. And that was a surprise there. If someone's driving, listen to this going, wait, she said what?
I know. Yep. But this is the real thoughts of Nas Homie. It's going through my head, I promise.
Well, we appreciate you opening up so much. I do want to ask a perspective question that I asked Coach Barnes-Arico when we had her on last week, and I'm going to ask a lot of people who were involved in this past season, men's and women's program. Do you realize the types of sacrifices that you made had such positive influences on other people, on Michigan fans, on those who were following your team, those who were following those games? Because in a year of so much difficulty in a lot of different ways, Michigan basketball brought a lot of joy. I'm sure in the flow of things, you're just focused on the task at hand, watching film, practicing, working out, etc. But now that you've had a chance to step back, do you realize that? Because it was palpable on the outside, what you and your team and what Juwan Howard and the men's team were doing. Do you realize that now?
Yeah, well, now that you said it, it makes a lot of sense. Just because for me, like I would hear it from like family members and they're just like, I don't know what I'd be doing if I, you know, wasn't watching your games. And after the season, even they were like, oh man, like what am I supposed to do now? And for me, that's just my basketball family being my basketball family. But when you do put it in perspective like that, yeah, there's a lot of people who are at home, you know, during this time because they couldn't go to work because they're sick or they're in that age group or health status where they shouldn't be around people, et cetera. And basketball was one thing that they could enjoy. So putting that into perspective, yeah, I mean, and I wouldn't, you know, change what we've done, you know, this season for anything, just because, you know, obviously we didn't have to make sacrifices, but we made sacrifices to do something that we loved and showcase our talents in front of people who love us and that we love back at home. So putting that to perspective is huge, and it makes everything a little bit more worth it. You know, not being able to see our families as often, not being able to see our friends as often, and really grinding it out. But it was a win-win for all of us, those who are playing, those who are watching. So just that you put that into perspective, it definitely it makes it a little bit better. It makes it sweeter and more enjoyable for me.
I think this time last year, if someone asked about Michigan women's basketball, they'd say, oh yeah, Naz Hillman plays there, and probably wouldn't know a whole lot about the rest of the team. I mean, if we're being honest about it, that probably is the situation. What was it like for you to see several of your teammates get the credit that I know you wanted them to get, that the coaching staff wanted them to get? The fact that, yes, your story was advanced by Michigan women's basketball getting to the Sweet 16, but so many others were as well.
Yeah. My press conference got a little bit of notice, and then I feel like this is the same thing. You know, you've obviously, like you said, people know me from Michigan, but that's not what's important to me. You know, I want people to understand and know our program and know Coach Rico and know the great players who are going to come after me, so that more people want to come and attend the University of Michigan. So that we set that spark under people to say, okay, they're contenders, they're competitive, they make it to the Sweet 16, they make it to the tournament. I want to go there. I want to be the next person that goes there to the University of Michigan and play under Coach Rico. But we have some special people on our team, special people, special players, and for them to finally get that recognition is just what they've been working for since forever. Obviously, one person that people were able to see and giving amazing minutes was Danielle Roush. And if we're, like we said, if we're being honest, who would have put Michigan in Danielle Roush like that, as that person? But she was everything. She's been everything for us. But now she was everything for the rest of the world to see. Incredible energy. You probably saw her dancing a little bit on commercials or things of that nature. But you know, because she's put in so much hard work and put in so much time behind the scenes, and for her to finally be able to showcase her talents and her energy and just how great of a point guard she was, I mean, that's special. That's, you know, that's something that you dream of. You dream of playing in the NCAA tournament. You dream of performing well. You worked so hard each and every day to get to that moment. And she finally made it, and she deserved all the credit and all the praise that she got. But I could go down the list. Leah Brown, under-recruited, AK, under-recruited, Haley Brown. She was always a star in her own right, but sometimes, you know, people forget about her and how incredible she is. Maddie Nolan, I can go on and on and on about my team. But because they put in so much work over the summer and sacrificed so much, for people to see that, I mean, it just brings a smile to my face, because we see it. The coaches see it. You know, each other, we see the work. But sometimes you don't always get that credit. And it was amazing to finally see.
You're coming to us right now from the locker room. You just got a workout in. I have to imagine that you were enjoying what had happened for, what, a day or two, and then ready to get back to work, knowing how you go about this. So what are these next few months like as you step away from one season? And, I mean, let's face it, the groundwork for the next season starts now.
Yeah. So getting into the gym, just trying to make sure that I am my best going into my senior season and being able to help those around me to be their best. We've got a lot of work to do. I mean, we have to rebuild, lost two key players in Haley and AK, and they brought so much experience, so much talent. Both of them on the defensive end were incredible for us. So some people have to pick up some slack. And, you know, as a senior now, which is, you know, so crazy to say, which someone reminded me of yesterday, I have to be able and ready to lead the charge so that we aren't just complacent with where we got this past season. Of course, we, you know, were so grateful and excited to make it to the Sweet 16, first time in program history, but we want more. And it's not, you know, us, you know, kind of being like, oh, that was great. We, trust me, we celebrated that and we were very excited about it, but now it's time to move forward. We want to make some more first and we want to have some seconds now. Just because we got that taste in our mouths of what the NCAA tournament is past the first two rounds. So just really getting into the gym, you know, working hard, making sure, you know, we keep it in contact with each other. My teammates are gym rats, so I'm 120% positive that they're in the gym as well and working as hard as can be so that they can be ready for the next season. But a lot of this summer is going to be, you know, getting our team chemistry together, have some great freshmen that are coming in. Our sophomores, you guys didn't see them a lot, but they're going to be a great talent. And they know that they have some work to do so they can be able to step on the court. But just really trying to make sure that everybody's in here getting better. And that's going to start with me, making sure that I'm in here trying to get in best of shapes possible and do all those little things so that we can make it far next season and hopefully being able to play, you know, 30 games in the regular season and then get into the tournament. So just a lot of work to do, not being complacent with where we are.
Last basketball related one, at least on the court, in addition to losing players, this team has lost now two assistants, Toyo Wilson going to SMU and Wes Brooks, now an assistant at Mississippi State. You talk about being a senior, you've already assumed leadership roles, but does that add a little bit extra there? Because they're going to be two new assistants on this staff. And I mean, let's face it, the Michigan way has worked and you've been a big part of that. So will there be additional leadership responsibilities thrust onto you because of those situations?
I do think so. And that's just because we do have a certain way that we run things, whether that's practice or travel and things like that. And those coaches won't know that. So us as players have to, you know, take those reins and be able to help the freshmen, because as much as the freshmen don't know, the assistant coaches don't know. And coach doesn't always have time in practice to break down every single little thing, which is usually, you know, something that the assistants would do. So that's going to be on us seniors and juniors to really help out the underclassmen as well as the coaches. I mean, we can all learn from each other and that's what that process will be like. And I'm sure coach will be bringing in excellent assistants. I have no doubt about that in my mind. But when you're moving from one system to another and you don't necessarily know the head coach or you don't necessarily know the players, somebody's got to help you a little bit. And, you know, we pride ourselves on being a family. So that integration process is going to be another thing that the seniors and juniors have to take part in and make sure that everything is smooth sailing. So there is a little bit more of a leadership role that would have to happen this year with, you know, assistants coming in rather than not.
We all saw, and I know you commented a little bit on the ridiculous discrepancies at the two tournaments, men's and women's. Kenray Johnson had tweeted out when Isaiah Livers and the hashtag not NCAA property group, Geo Baker, Jordan Bohannon, and others had requested a meeting that Isaiah had asked for you and for AK to be a part of that. Can you just take us through that process from your standpoint and what you know about a charge that Isaiah and others are leading?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I could go so many ways with that. But first, just, you know, Geo and Isaiah and Bohannon, those three really stepping up and taking charge was huge in a year that has been about speaking up and using your voice in everything, social justice, gender inequality. now the stance of, you know, not NCAA property is just inspiring to me because, you know, for a long, long time, student athletes weren't speaking up. We weren't, you know, saying how we feel, what we felt that we deserved or anything of that nature. And as much as things may not change right now, if we continue into this direction, I do feel like, you know, sooner than later, there will be some change. but we have to continue to talk about it. And that's one thing that helped us in the bubble to get a actual weight room. Which, you know, I'm sure a lot of people saw, but the equivalent of dumbbells that was the highest of 30 pounds, and yoga mats was what was described as the women's weight room, where the men had squat racks and dumbbells to probably, I don't know, 100 or more, and just a very well set up weight room that the women didn't have anything to come close to. But some players were able to speak up about it, post on social media. Social media has been a huge help to a lot of people in terms of, you know, getting the word out and using our platform as student athletes to get things out. Going back to, you know, the meeting that was held between Bohannon and Gio and Mark Emmert and Isaiah, we ended up having a conversation about it. And like you said, Isaiah did, or the guys in that meeting did vouch for women to be in that meeting. And I think there was some things that were lost in translation. So the guys 100% did ask for us to be in that meeting. And from what they recalled, Mark Emmert just wanted those three in the meeting. But I believe that there was a email lost in translation that may have said something about the women being maybe in another meeting or in that meeting. So there's still some things that are left up in the air. But I did, AK and I did get back with Isaiah. We were supposed to at some point end up having a meeting. I don't know when that will be, if it will be, if it was just in the talks, just because there was some heat coming. So that meeting has not been had, if there's supposed to be one. Not going to hold my breath on it, but I definitely do hope that, you know, we could talk to Mark Emmert, just because, you know, I do think that having a firsthand experience and hearing the disappointment that some of us have, hearing the emotion that some of us had, seeing the difference and the discrepancies of the weight room, I think that'll open things up a little bit more than hearing it from a second and third source. I do think that firsthand experiences are just more beneficial, just because it's not word of mouth. And, you know, we experienced it, we saw it, and that was just simply unacceptable. And there were apologies made, but, you know, those only go so far. I mean, definitely happy that it was fixed, but I don't, you know, I don't think that should have had to be fixed. It should have been like that from the beginning. And, you know, women's sports shouldn't be treated as secondhand or JV or less than. So that was just, you know, some of the thoughts that I had going into that, and definitely wanted to speak out about that and repost and share some of the things that other athletes put out there as well.
I appreciate you sharing that. Last question. You talk about your voice and being vocal. Obviously, now you aren't playing games, but you are on from a sports perspective, an even bigger platform. You took Michigan and helped take Michigan further. You've had that voice. Fingers crossed, the pandemic is lessening. I know not in Michigan, but vaccines are going out. There is more optimism, certainly, than there was this time a year ago. And unfortunately, you know, there has been news of stuff that you have protested in the past that have come up in Minneapolis this week. What type of plans and what types of flexibility do you have? Because A, hopefully the pandemic's getting better. B, I think you have an even bigger platform than you did 12 months ago. And C, yeah, I think there have been some improvements, but not everything is fixed the way that I assume that you and others would want it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that, like I continue to say, talking about it is the first steps. And like you just said, our platforms are getting bigger and bigger. I mean, the amount of followings that myself and some of my teammates or people at other schools have is huge. And you can just reach so many people by one post, one tweet. And I think that we can no longer be silent about the issues. They are recognized when we speak out about them. They're recognized when we voice our opinions. And that'll take us the longest way, because if we're silent about it or we try to push it to the back of our minds, then you know, everybody thinks we're going back to normal, which, you know, a lot of people thought that we felt a couple months after the George Floyd incident. And now we're back basically in you know, a similar situation. And sometimes being complacent and not talking about it is where you take steps back. Continuing to apply pressure and doing some of the same things that we did this year and not only doing it this year because everybody's talking about it, but continuing to talk about social injustices and gender inequalities, and not just wearing your MLK Day shirt for Black History Month, but continuing to educate the people around you and continuing to educate yourselves. Also continuing to vote. Obviously the presidential election was an election that everyone talked about and made sure everybody got out to vote, but you can also vote in your city, in your county, in your community. So continuing to do that and being a part of the Big Ten Equality Coalition is also going to give me a huge voice and platform to continue to talk to people who want to see change. And I'm able to put some things into place to seek out some change, and being in the education subcommittee, I think is a huge part of that change, educating younger people to think differently, to speak out, to go against what may be normal or what may seem as, you know, what everybody else is doing, or even, you know, educating older people. I mean, we can all have more education in our lives. I mean, it definitely won't hurt us, especially since we're coming from different eras, from people speaking out about, you know, what they don't believe in and what they do believe in, compared to, you know, we, very, very few of us, you know, hold our tongue about, you know, what we believe in. So I just think the first step is continue to talk about it and not get complacent when something isn't going bad. You know, why do we have to wait for someone to die for us to continue to have these conversations about injustices? So I'll continue to say the conversation starts it all, and then people put things into action, and then things begin to change. We got a long way to go, but you know, the smallest steps will get us there, and the more people that hear about it and talk about it, you know, the faster we'll move and the better things will be, in my opinion.
Well, Naz, we appreciate you sharing your platform on this platform and talking. It was so much fun watching you and your team play. Already can't wait for next season. Continued success, continued grinding, and we will catch up soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
That'll wrap things up for this week's edition of Defend the Block. Definitely encourage you to check out Conquering Heroes as we get ready for a big weekend for Michigan men's and women's gymnastics. This week, it was Kurt Holder. Last week, Bev Plotke, as John Jansen caught up with the two head coaches of Michigan gymnastics in advance of the NCAA championships this weekend. And coming up on Thursday, here on In the Trenches, John, we'll catch up with Matt Weiss, the new quarterback's coach. Yeah. Quarterbacks will be a hot topic on the Michigan football side of things here throughout the spring and summer. We'll also recap that spring game that Michigan had, the spring scrimmage, if you will, that John Jansen was inside the Big House for. We'll get his thoughts on what he saw offensively and defensively. Subscribe, rate, review here on MGo Blue Podcasts. I'm Brian Bush. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to Naz. Thanks to Sarah Van Meter for organizing the interview. You're listening to Defend the Block. Go Blue.
Thanks for listening to today's edition of Defend the Block, part of our Michigan Athletics Podcast Network, MGo Blue Podcasts. The preceding is a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.